Hello and welcome to the Dust Nostalgia Podcast, Episode 3. I'm your host, Anatoly, and today I have another special guest with me. Sir, please introduce yourself.
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, and I play old games, and I collect old games, and I also make games that look like old games. So I'm glad to be here.
Yes, if you're into independent games or adventure games, you probably know who Ben is very well. What would you say your most recognized work is, sir, or a couple?
Oh, probably the one that spread the furthest would be the work that I've done with Dave Gilbert on some of his Blackwell games, I guess.
So. Oh, yes. Yeah. So, yes. Ben is an artist and an expert in the area, and which is why today we're going to talk about nothing related to that. Today we're going to talk about the marvelous build engine for first-person shooter games and the games that utilized it.
Good.
Yes, excellent. I couldn't wait to discuss this. So I think we should probably give a quick rundown of the engine. Build engine was commissioned by 3D Realms, and the person who made it is Ken Silverman, who previously made a Ken's Labyrinth game. I don't know. Have you played Ken's Labyrinth?
I have only just a tiny little bit of it. I haven't played very much of it.
Yeah, it's like this weird Wolfenstein 3D clone, but like it's ray casting engine, but it has like a lot of like really weird features. Like it has tons of features, like the slot machines, like the interactive slot machines right in the middle of the level and stuff like that. So a lot of very interesting stuff, but it's very amateurish. Amateurish from one point of view, because Ken was, I think, like 15 years old, 16 years old when he made it.
Yeah, he was a kid.
And it had, like, all this, you know, he did everything. He did, like, the music engine for it, he did the sounds, he did all the art, and it was published eventually by the version 2 was published by Epic Mega Games. So, after that, he made, the Sector-like engine, like Doom, which was ready by mid-94. And, it had all those features, and he was only 19 years old at the time. So, it had all the features Doom had, plus some more really impressive stuff, like, let's see, can you remember everything? Well, it's basically slopes would be the first, sloped surfaces would be a big one.
Which is huge over the Doom engine, which was...
Yes, like back in the time, people were like freaking out over in Doom, all levels are built around the fact, around the limitations, so they hide the limitations of the engine quite well, but there's no slopes, it's just staircases and just height differences. But so, build had slopes, it also had complete texture control, so you could resize and position the textures on the surfaces perfectly. Unlike in Doom, where you just had the upper, middle, and lower texture parts per each, vertical polygon. Also, rendering sprites as surfaces, which allowed for things to be put on walls and, different stuff like that. Just like, or semi-3D objects like bridges and stuff like that, where just flat sprites laid out. And of course, moving sectors.
Which is amazing.
Amazing, because that allowed for, doors opening, cars moving, and stuff like that. So, and a bunch of other stuff eventually. I guess we'll... what else? Am I missing any? I just mentioned two, but to me, that was like two of the biggest ones.
I think that's the biggest stuff. Game by game, it slowly advanced, but I think we should cover that per game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. Yeah. So, 3D Realms commissioned Ken to write the engine for their upcoming Duke Nukem 3D game, but when the engine was still being built, they were licensing it out to other developers. So, basically, the game started coming out just right after the engine was ready. So, I guess we're going to go in chronological date.
Sure. Just one interesting point is that you mentioned that Epic Mega Games released Ken's Labyrinth at some point. Mm-hmm. It's funny because the guys at Epic Mega Games talked about how they nearly put Ken Silverman onto building a first-person shooter engine for them, but never ended up doing it. And they say that's probably what pushed them into doing the fully 3D Unreal Engine, which heaps of games were built in. So,
yes, absolutely. That's another thing about build. It's probably, as far as sort of sector, BSP engine for Dust has the most games made on it by a variety of companies.
Yeah.
Even though there's all kinds of tech was available at the time. I mean, Doom was a huge hit, but I mean, there's like three games that came out that used Doom Engine afterwards.
Three decent games anyway.
Yeah, basically. And with Build, you had games going for years and years, like after a fact. So basically, the first game is a bit of an oddity. Legend of the Seven Paladins. And the reason it's a bit of an oddity is for the longest time, people didn't even think it existed. And now, thanks to the internet, we've seen the full versions, and we actually have seen that it actually has been released boxed. But people thought for the longest time that the game never actually came out. And the reason for that was this company, Korean company?
Taiwanese, I think.
Taiwanese, okay, that's what I thought. Taiwanese company licensed or asked 3D Realms for the engine so they can develop this first-person shooter game, and never paid the royalties. So 3D Realms was like, okay, well, don't release the game. Well, they were like, okay, and they released it anyway. Since you just recently played it, want to recap your experience with Legends of the Seven Paladins?
I found Legends of the Seven Paladins to be unplayable. Completely unplayable on modern hardware anyway.
Yes.
Which is... And I'm not saying that because it's a bad game. Technically, it's unplayable. It doesn't run properly.
No, it doesn't. And... It never did. I look at that game as like, there's something there, and one day might be worth revisiting with proper tools. But it has all those weird gimmicky things, like in the beginning which the beginning of the game looks almost exactly like Ken's tech demo that we'll discuss later, I guess. But with a train card and everything, but you get to select your character with different stats like speed and. How far the missiles extend or stuff like that. All of those stats are completely useless because you're going to get massacred within seconds of playing. Yes, basically you get bombarded by a ton of enemies with like hundreds of projectiles, and you die. You just die, and you die, and you die, and you die. And I look at that game as the test of manliness, because I know grown men have been reduced to tears by it. So eventually, I'm sure I'm thank God for the internet and the preservation of it, because people I guess will keep revisiting it. And
of course,
yeah. So that's that. That's for the Legend of Seven Paladins. Anything to add?
No. I don't think even if it kind of got to the point where everybody figured out how we could play it properly, it's not really that interesting a setting. I can't imagine it being an amazing game. I don't think we're missing out on much.
No, it looks really simple and very unpolished. Not just technically, but the levels look bland. They're just like boxes and stairs with the same textures and stuff like this. I like the concept of multiple weapons and different stats for characters, which I guess sort of kind of like Rise of the Triad does that a little bit. But
right,
not with but not with different weapons. Like Legend of the Seven Paladins will have different weapons for
which
for
is kind of characters. Like Hexen.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. So yeah, it's that. But yeah, other than that, there's nothing really to look at there. And yes, most people played the demo, but most people who played it, at least. But the full version is available, and I don't know. I don't. You know, only it's only for collectors, basically. People who like really want to collect rare games look for that in a box, but only to put it on the shelf and I'm sure to never touch it ever. So that's that. So, and moving on to 1995, we have a couple of interesting things. First of all, of course, is Witchhaven by Intracorp.
Yeah.
That's an interesting game to look at. What do you think?
I think Witchhaven has some... It's got some pretty clever ideas. It's obviously, it's the first playable game with the build engine. It really feels like an early version of the build engine when you go and play it after sort of Duke and Blood and Redneck Rampage mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. It feels clunky to move around in. The graphics are ugly beyond belief.
Yes.
They are just awful, you know.
Yes.
It's got some fun ideas, you know. You can see they've got slopes and stuff like this, and they'd first started building levels with slopes, but a lot of it falls apart in the execution, as you know. It's hard.
Is.
It is balls hard.
Yes, it's insanely hard. Like, I remember the first time I played Witchhaven, actually, which has this the most did you go into the setup program and test the sound?
No, I didn't.
Because that's one of my first impressions. That's one of my first. It has the most ear piercing loud sound test with music and screams and
Wow.
It's like music with like some of the sounds of like swords clashing, screams, and then it's like just like dare to enter. It's the most ridiculous thing. Yeah, I remember first time playing Witchhaven, which also actually the first game. It runs in 320x200 or 640x480. You have the choice.
Yes.
The minis don't scale, they just, they just filled out the rest of the frame with, like, artwork.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting, so everything's, like, top left corner. I mean, unusual, but practical.
It works.
I guess. So, yeah, you start with Witchhaven, and immediately you have, like, a lightning, you have sloped levels and everything, and a crawling speed at which your character walks. It's really, the controls feel really weird. You're, like, in a boat with a rocket strapped to it when you turn. That's what the controls feel like. And the graphical style is weird because it has a combination of 3D objects, digitized real things like digitized actors and just toys and, you know, like your hands and
clay
everything
and,
is like
yeah.
a thing. And then it had the claymation enemies, which is like the first thing you encounter is those, I don't know, goblins, trolls.
They're weird.
Which are two fractions and they fight against each
other.
Like the first scene is like they really, you can feel that the developers really played with the engine.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, we have all this engine with all those cool features that they saw in a tech demo, and they like immediately started throwing it, like sectors moving, lighting, like all those, and actually use the animations, because the animation engine is built in into the build engine, but they for like textures and stuff, but they actually used, if you look in the editor, they used that feature to actually animate the sprites in the game, so they didn't have to create their own animation engine. Yeah, they did those. They like from each angle, those things are the animations are preset for the enemies. But yeah, and then like the jumping is it has this weird thing with jumps, and it like raises you to a ledge where you can climb the ledges somehow. In a
yes.
really weird way that doesn't look like anything like climbing. You just appear on the top of it at some point. But this style of 3D digitized video and really weird looking claymation creatures is just so clashing. There's no kind of consistency in graphics, and so you have that, and on top of that you also have really, really bad levels.
Yeah, they're not... They feel like they were designed by people that had never actually designed a level before. It's like... It feels like my first attempts in Unreal Edit.
Yeah, like a lot of it, especially some of the levels were like more mazy with doors. Like sometimes you would go in and you would end up in a dead end and, you know, you'll have to open up a wall. There is no clue for you to open up a wall, but you know, you just have to figure it out. And that happens a lot in the game. A lot of deadly drops where you just have to take a leap of faith and drop on a platform, which will then raise or fall or something horrible. It is hard because just shit just appears and kills you. Just all of a sudden it'll be like multiple enemies with projectiles and will kill you instantly, or you'll just be walking around la-di-da-di-da and bam, you end up in the pit with your heart in a stake, you know? That sort of thing.
And those goddamn stone faces on the walls that shoot fireballs at you.
Yes, that's the probably one of the first things you encounter on like level 2, and you're like instantly dead, and you don't even know what killed you at first.
Yeah,
because it makes no sense. And later on, those faces appear in the midair, out of nowhere. Like you go into the room, and you'll kill 5 like fire breathing demons, and then all of a sudden, like, and you'll be like running in lava because you know the developers didn't see it fit for you, you know, to design a proper fighting platform for you or something like that. So you just run around.
They
in
really
lava,
liked kill... their lava.
Yeah, they there do. They do, and. In insta kills, like really powerful blows. However, I'll give Witch Heaven props because I mean, does it take a lot from Hexen? I mean, or was it just same ideas around the same time? Because the idea is it's you know, it has a light RPG elements, I guess, where you actually have experience points that increase the effectiveness of your weapons, and you also have a ton of magic that you can
pick
up.
Yeah, you've got
and,
spells you can
spells
freeze
that you use
people
with
and
the
stuff like
F keys and stuff like that. And then you have multiple potions that you collect and carry with you. So yeah, controlling that game is a bit of a pain in the ass. It's like 55 keys, and you know, between the potions and the spells and your actual weapons, it gets weird. But like, there's some really neatly weird features. Like, you get, my favorite is a bow and an arrow.
Ah, yeah, and you can shoot
right?
Them.
That's when you shoot it, the arrows stick to the walls, and you
yes.
can climb them.
Yeah, that's an awesome feature.
You can stand on the arrows. Like, you can literally scale castle walls and cheat in any way you can if you have on our flying spells. Again, like, the developers really didn't feel like restricting you. You have a flying spell, just fly wherever you want until it runs out. But yeah, the game is insanely hard, and in the long run, I know it's somewhat of a really, really minor cult classic. I know people who are really, really fond of it, mostly people who played it when it came around. So in 1994, there was not really anything like that, and Build Engine did seem to impress people, even in its rough form that existed at that point in time.
I have to say, it's really disappointing, because you could see the potential there for a really good game. It just
absolutely
they lacked... Whether they ran out of money or
skill,
mostly
feels it's because people had no experience in designing games.
Yeah, sure. It makes me laugh because I have the soft key release here, and it says on the front here, the ultimate medieval adventure game. It's it's nothing at all like an adventure game. So, don't believe that.
Yeah, it's they're very interesting. Well, back in the day, the ending to that Balls Hard game is also... It's just basically a still picture of you sitting on a throne and being like, you win. And it's like, okay. I mean, granted, back in the day, games really didn't spend much time congratulating you. But, like, it's really like all those, like... that game, if you really want to play it, it's like blood and sweat, really. Like, especially by the end. It gets really, really ridiculously hard. And... Yeah. Which I think it only also has only 2 difficulty levels, right? It has like easy and not easy. Like easy, like
and
it's basically
not easy anyway.
Difficult and very difficult. Those are the 2 levels that it has. So anything else you want to add on Witch Haven?
I think that pretty much sums Witch Haven up. It
you
is disappointing to see.
You know what? For each game, do you think we should just give a recommendation if it's worth it or not worth it to try out if people haven't played it?
I think Witchhaven's worth it. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Just, like, check it out. Just check it out of curiosity. Yeah. Like, and see That's if fair. You can, you know, forgive some of the shortcomings and maybe play just for a little while. Don't have to play through the whole thing. But, like, it's interesting to see those concepts at work.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, I would love to see a modern shooter with bows and arrows where you could climb up the walls. You could climb up the arrows. That would be amazing.
Right? Like, that's the newest... That's the neatest feature of that game. Combined with the thing that you could, like, latch into the edges, so it would pull you up over the edges. Like, it really, especially in the later levels, yeah. Like, it gave you quite a sense of exploration.
I think if you put that in a new Thief game or something like that and showed it off at E3, yeah. People would be raving about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. More bows and arrows, developers, please. More bows and arrows and shooters.
Agreed.
The climbable bows and arrows. All right. Also, and another thing in 1995, a classic of sorts, based on the books and the very unpopular TV series, William Shatner's Tech War. Take it away, yes. Sir.
Well, I played Tech War not very long after reading the first Doom book. So I was playing the conversion of a book to a first-person shooter right after playing the conversion of a shooter to a book. And I have to say, and I said this on Twitter, and I'll repeat it here, Tech War fails at being a game more than Doom fails at being books. Which says a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
I really like the setting. Like, the build engine really comes to life. You know, in Doom 2, where they tried to make, like, a city, it really didn't feel like a city. But
no.
In Tech War, it really feels like a city. It's fun to explore around the city, except everything else is shit. It's just shit.
Yeah. Oh, it's god awful. Basically, like, even right from the get-go, like, the game opens with this really flashy FMV intro, which is just the intro to the TV show. And then, before each mission, you have a personal appearance of, you know, the Shat.
Of Bill.
Mr. Shatner. Mr. Shatner appears and tells you who to kill. That's basically the level. Find the drug lord and
the
kill him.
The tech lord.
The tech lord, and from there on, you're dropped into the sort of semi-fully functional build engine city, and you just roam at your leisure until you find who you have to find and kill them and progress to the next level. In theory, most of the graphics in that game are digitized photos for textures,
yes,
and
they
stuff
really
like this.
Look like it.
So.
Too.
And for 1995, it looked like a real city. They built a real city with the built engine.
Yeah, they really did.
And then, you know, it also has, like, moving buses, revolving doors, and all that built engine and stuff on the showcase. However, it also... I honestly think Witchhaven has better controls than
which is saying a lot. That's for,
which is saying a lot, because Witchhaven's controls are fucking god-awful. Tech War is unplayable in probably to me the first and foremost because of controls. It's impossible to navigate yourself in this rather good looking 3D world, which is a shame. And then come the enemies, digitized
the enemies
people. And they're supposed to be some of them, like, the idea is you don't know who's your enemy, who's your friend. Civilians.
It's a very clever idea because you're meant to figure out who's a hologram and who's an android and who's a human being. It's a little bit like Blade Runner. So you walk around and you pull out your weapon, and if they're a human being, they'll be very afraid, and if they're not, they'll come at you or just not do anything. So you shoot the ones that don't do anything. And when you do, it goes, was a hologram on your screen.
Yeah, and the cops start shooting at you violently.
The second you pull out your gun, the police start shooting at you. So the whole concept falls flat immediately.
It's fucked right there. The thing is, they're also animated and run around at this ridiculous speed. So basically, you die before you get, and it takes like a minute for you to pull out your weapon while this animations play out on your HUD. And basically, yeah, you're dead within like seconds. Like, you have more than two enemies, forget about it. Like, you're done.
And there's no pacing to any of the design.
Yeah, and the thing is, the game gives you pretty much no clues as per where to go or anything you're supposed to explore. So your exploration element is also screwed right from the boat when you get shot by a couple of enemies. Like, forget about exploring, you're just like trying to survive. So that's essentially the game. Basically, the two core concepts of the game are mutually exclusive and don't work. So the game basically falls apart within seconds, and yeah, it's not fun to play.
You end up shooting all of the civilians, basically, in order to figure it. Yeah. And the pacing is totally off.
Yes.
I remember finding in my first like 2 minutes of play, I had found not only five different pistols, but a missile launcher. And I thought, this is a little bit too quick to give me this many weapons. I mean, there's no point behind any of it because, as soon as you get into a bit with a number of enemies, there's no hope, so, yeah. With the city that they've got, it could have been such a great game. And some of the ideas were amazing.
To me, the good ideas are not as apparent to me as in Witchhaven, because the ideas are broken in Tech War. So they didn't think it through. Like, it seemed to be like, we're gonna have a city and this and that, and they just like literally those were like four lines in the design document, if there ever was one, and they just went on making it, and nobody ever for a second stopped. And it looked like nobody actually played the game while they were developing it. Does it? Because
it really feels like there was no beta testers or alpha testers or anything.
It just looks like, because like, how do you release a game that's so fundamentally broken? It just looks like they had artists doing their artist thing. They had the programmers programming, and then they just put it together and were like, "Well, we're done here. Let's move on." And nobody ever really. Like, even while they were making it looks like nobody played it, because if somebody would play it in 5 minutes, it would come up in the conversation like, guys, I don't think this is working. That's all I really have to say about it.
I really didn't expect much from Tech War, not only because everyone had told me it was bad, but you get to the character select screen and there's a little emblem in the top left hand corner where they've taken a well drawn emblem and just put in black and white. It looks like it's been done in like paintbrush or something like that. They've just done this stupid, like, the laziest touch-up job in any game I've ever seen. It is awful. It's horrendous. The second I saw that, I thought, well, I'm not expecting much from this anyway. So, in summary, Tech War is shit.
Yes,
William Shatner
is.
Should have nothing to do with video games.
No. It's a derogatory to mention other games in the same sentence with Tech War. So my guess is I do not recommend it.
If you want to experience
the pain, just download the demo and run it. It's not going to have Shatner in it, but which is probably the best part of that game. If you're a William Shatner fan, if you're a collector of all things Shatner, pick up the copy of Tech War today. Put it on the same shelf that you have your stacks of VHS with the show and the book series, and it'll make you happy and your life marginally better.
And you'll save some poor gamer from accidentally buying it.
It's true. So some poor collector who might actually play it and commit suicide immediately afterwards.
I think I saw it for £5 on eBay.
It's not worth £5. £5 is like $10.
No. Yeah, I know.
No, it's like, you know what, like I a while ago I bought John Carpenter's Ghost of Mars, the movie, for 39 cents, and I think I was overpaying. So Tech War is about the same level. Okay, so moving on to, those are the two games for 1995, and now we're moving on to the mighty 1996. And right at the beginning of the year, Intercorp releases Witchhaven 2.
Blood Vengeance.
And for all the good things I said about Witchhaven and how it was interesting and everything, I'm going to take it all away from Witchhaven 2. because 2 years later, oh no, a year later, there was no excuse for Witchhaven 2. Like, I'll forgive the first one for being that early on. Second one is just... Alright, did you play Witchhaven 2?
I did, and the thing that amazed me the most about Witchhaven 2 is somehow they managed to make it control even worse than Witchhaven, which is mind-boggling to me.
Yes, it is. And
in Witchhaven, you control like a tank. In Witchhaven 2, you control like a tank on ice. And when you jump, you can't jump a sensible amount. You jump like 30 feet in the air. So the jumping is basically useless. It's just, there's nothing good about Witchhaven 2.
Witchhaven 2, there is one good thing about Witchhaven 2. And it's actually a really frantic, like, capture the flag multiplayer.
Oh, okay.
Which nobody played.
No, I don't.
It has, like, all the graphics are redone and slightly, like, most of the claymation stuff is gone in favor of pre-rendered 3D. And the difficulty, the difficulty is actually ramped up higher.
Oh, yeah.
Enemies are much more powerful right from the get-go. Levels somehow became more open, but with that also just bland, just because they're big, just open spaces. And other than that, nothing really changed. Just the game was slightly more adapted to high res. So
play Witchhaven 1.
There's no enjoyment for me in Witchhaven 2. Just because all the sort of, all the exploration elements of it and everything. Like, the controls are even more broken. The exploration is worse. So to me, those are the two things. Like, the exploration was one of the things about Witchhaven that I kind of liked. So now with that thing gone, and it's exactly the same game, basically, other than that. Just more difficult for many reasons. So I'd say there's not really much to say about it, and I cannot recommend. Just play the first one.
Play the first one. It's the best, you know. Which is quite disappointing, really.
Absolutely.
Because they could have taken it and made it a really good game, but they made it worse.
And we come to somewhat, I guess, somewhat of a curiosity. Power Slave or Exhumed, depending on where you were in the world.
Exhumed was Europe, wasn't it? Power Slave US?
Yes, Power Slave the US, and you can tell. The games are completely identical besides the title. Basically... it was a DOS version of originally a console game designed by Lobotomy Software.
Yes, it is. And I have to say, Lobotomy Software have an amazing logo. Their logo is one of my favorite low-res logos ever. It's fantastic.
But to me, that's old. A lot of people like that game, but to me, it's kind of all downhill from there. Basically, the primary focus was obviously the console versions.
Sure.
Where Power Slave is this hub-level Egyptian-themed first-person shooter with, like, puzzle elements and those really sort of cool effects and everything. Like, it's a straightforward shooter, but on consoles you have sort of explosions, walls moving, and traveling back and forth between the levels. So for PC, build engine was chosen because, I guess, of the moving walls and all that sort of stuff, and the ease of use. But DOS version really pales in comparison to the console ones, mainly because, you know, it's kind of bland. I don't know if you think differently.
I have to say, I actually do like Power Slave, the DOS version.
Mm-hmm.
I think it shows off... It's the first game that really, like, that has stuff like you can push a crate around it, mm-hmm, to get to different parts of the level. There's various places where you need to push a crate around, which they did that in Redneck Rampage and stuff, mm-hmm, like that, which we'll get to later. But it's kind of fun to see such an early game with stuff where you can push crates around and explode walls and stuff like that. I really like that. The setting pales very quickly. I mean, it goes from Egyptian level to Egyptian level to Egyptian level. It never really, you know, it never really pushes itself too hard. It's kind of cute because apparently they called it Power Slave to tie in with Iron Maiden's Power Slave album, which Iron Maiden always used.
That's very interesting. I did not know that.
Iron Maiden always used this Egyptian imagery in their albums. And I've actually gone and seen Iron Maiden live in concert, and there's all these crazy Egyptian stuff on stage. So
It's kind of cute that they tried to do that, but also totally misleading because it has nothing to do with it. Iron Maiden. I have to say, as far as protagonists go, the protagonist of Power Slave is ridiculous. His voice changes, like, he changes character from a huge gruff man to a geek, like, depending on what he's saying. I really like the graphics on the DOS version. Some of the art is amazing. There's these enemies that are these mummies, and they hurl these skulls at you. And if you get hit by a white skull, then you get damaged. But if you get hit by a red skull, you actually turn into one of them, and you walk really slowly, and you can basically insta-kill things with your staff, but you only get one shot. I have no idea why they put that in the game, but the animation for it is sensational. And it's kind of fun to actually... A totally pointless element, but it's kind of fun. I think it really falls apart in a couple of places, other than the bland design and the repetitive designs of the levels, is the enemies are really easy. It's just, there's nothing there. You just shoot them and they're dead, you know? There's these cat-headed enemies that sort of, when you shoot them, they disappear.
And they don't really move any interesting way. They just stand there waiting and, like, attacking you until you shoot them. And, like, they are kind of those, like, really early build engine, like, low-res sprites, which somehow, like, takes away from the art for me a little bit. Some of them, like, they don't seem to be consistent either. Like, I don't know if it's my memory or things, but I remember certain things being, like, really, really scaled, and other things looking actually good, like, for some reason. Maybe I remember it differently, but because I haven't played it in a very long time. But
no,
like,
the big boss guys that come out of the lava, these huge big monsters, they look so ridiculously scaled compared to everything else in the game. It's stupid. And there's these cat-headed bikini ladies, basically. And it just looks like a cat head has been pasted onto a lady's body, which looks a bit silly. But the animation for them, they have some really nice animations.
Yes.
How they did the visual effects there, I have no idea. So, yeah, it has some redeeming factors, but then you get to stuff like platforming. The platforming of a first-person shooter is just... Oh, we'll cover this later.
We haven't figured that out at the moment. Yeah, it's unfortunately we're going to come up on that era where people are like, "Hey, look, we have 3D objects suspended. People love jumping, don't they?" And it took surprisingly quite a few years before people were like, "You know what? This, like, everybody hates this. Let's not do that anymore." Why it took so long to do that is unknown to me.
No idea.
But yeah, I'd say Power Slave Exhumed. I'd say check out the console versions first, which have nothing to do with the build engine, of course. But, pick it up and play it. As Ben said, there's some interesting stuff there, and it's fun. I guess in small doses, it's fun.
Sure.
It's a solid game with, like, it's the control. Unlike all the other games that we covered so far, Power Slave has really good controls.
It really does, yeah.
And it feels like a complete game made by people who knew how to design a consistent game. So it really doesn't have any of the shortcomings of the games we previously discussed.
But it also lacks some of the good ideas. So yeah,
level design, questionable, but. It's a fun game, to relax for an hour. An hour a day and probably no more. Yeah, so I'd say, check it out.
I'd say check it out, but don't use the flamethrower, because you will die. It is the suicide weapon.
I guess now we can move on to the big one.
The biggest of all the build engine games.
The really big one. The 1996, the world shook as a classical game protagonist was reinvented and entered the 3D space in the colossus of mid-90s first-person shooters that was Duke Nukem 3D.
I think it says a lot about a game when you can have two successful platformers made with a character, and then people from any point from 1998 that started playing games had no idea that Duke Nukem used to be a platformer. No idea.
What can we say about Duke Nukem 3D? Well, I personally can say a lot, so I don't really know if I should. I mean, if there is some, I'll put it this way: if there is someone out there who's listening right now, but for some reason have not played Duke Nukem 3D, you should probably, unless you're like in your car driving to work, you should pause this nonstop, but just pause it so you can resume later. And then probably going to be much later, and go wherever you can, go on Good Old Games, or now you can go on Steam and buy the new edition by Devolver Digital on Steam. Just buy Duke Nukem 3D, because that game to this day is hours and hours and hours of fun. And it's fun because, I don't know, everything is right about it. From controls to the setting to the all the new features of the build engine that it used. I mean, that's the build engine game, basically. That's the first game that utilized all the neat features of it. Like, it integrated them in the gameplay so perfectly that people were blown away.
I remember when I first played it as a kid, just blown away. You know, you've got this first-person shooter, and you've played Doom, and all of a sudden, you step in an enemy's corpse, and you leave bloody footprints. You know, you're blowing up buildings, you're shrinking down to tiny. There's all these things.
It's amazing. I do remember the first time, new Sound Blaster card, ran Duke Nukem 3D right from the logo already, like the pre-rendered explosion behind the bam. It like, started off the music right in your face before the game even started. There's this really great Army of Darkness poster inspired title screen, and right from the first level, at the time, you know, we used to do sort of the fantasy, you know, like, you know, what games do we have around? Heretic, Hexen, you know, was recent, and then Doom before that. All the sort of like, you know, non-real world settings for 3D games.
Yeah.
And Duke Nukem 3D, I mean, you look at it now, and of course it doesn't look like a city. But in your imagination, even to this day, it's you know, it looked like an actual, you know, function city. Like right from the get go, you're on the roof. You go through the ventilation shaft, and you like drop down downtown LA, or supposedly downtown LA, and right there,
very small
and, like,
version.
Everything is like right in your face. Like you have destructible walls, enemies appearing, enemies flying and falling down, exploding into jibs, secrets, you know, a CD porn theater, like it's sort of dripping taps, toilets. It was a big deal back in the day where you could open a door in a public restroom in a movie theater, and there was an alien taking a dump. You know, it was hilarious back then. So she's like, take a leak, add plus 10 health, you know
oh,
what I'm
man.
Saying? It was great. You could
Absolutely.
Climb through ventilation shafts, find secrets. Just the real world setting really did it, combined with excellent music. And the protagonist that was the, you know, apart from Power Slave, it was the basically the first known protagonist in the first-person shooter that talked.
Sure.
We actually used to say a lot, but actually he doesn't say that much. Mostly stuff from, like, Army of Darkness, Evil Dead, and just a bunch of, you know, They Live and a bunch of other stuff. But it's only, you know, it really doesn't say more than, like, 20, 30 things. I don't even think there are 30 things, to be honest with you.
I don't know. I always feel like I'm missing out when I play games like Duke and Blood, because I don't watch movies. I know so few movies, so I don't know what's quotes and what it's from.
Oh, you're missing out on Blood then, because...
Yeah, that's what I realized.
We'll get to that, but I once extracted the sound RFF file from Blood just to see how many things they had the poor guy record. And I think the amount of sounds in a game is over 3,000.
He says a lot. It blows me away how many different lines he's got.
Not only that, but like, well, I guess we'll save that to till we get to Blood. For now, it's Duke 3D time. So, yeah, the art style is great. I don't think any of it is. I mean, it. I think all of it is actually just pixel art, right? None of it really feels like digitized art.
No,
like digitized, you know, like digitized textures, like the, even like because you know the metal looks like it's drawn and doesn't look like.
Yeah,
like you look at like Tech War and stuff, and you could tell those were photos.
Oh yeah,
just and there's a lot of art in that game too, like. Very well utilized to for all kinds of environments.
It's crazy how much the settings change. It's absolutely crazy.
You go from like an alien lair and back into the city to a Japanese restaurant to a bank.
Oh yeah, you've got submarines,
and
you've
they
got
really
earthquakes
nailed
and
that you know set piece design laid out by Doom. When you move from one set piece into the other in Duke Nukem, the set pieces are massive. Submarines, canyons, alien crafts. Again, the first football field, like the first time you collect two key card, flip a card, mini puzzle. There are four switches. Press two of them in the right combo.
Yeah.
You'll get a switch. You pull the switch, and the building in front of you just goes down in a blaze of explosions, and it just blows your mind and. Just those sort of things. The moving sectors, the raising sector height is used constantly in Duke for all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Also, you got those great weapons. Like, all of a sudden, you have, you know, pipe bombs with remote detonators. You just throw it in, you know, like, wait for things going from around the corner. Just bam, explode. Bloody jibs. Duke says something final, like, blow it out of your ass. You know, it's just a... references to everything, funny stuff, you know, OJ chase on TV, or you know, of course, how can we not bring up the interactive strippers?
So much controversy
around that time with games being super violent, and Duke added, you know, an added element of toilets and strippers, made famous by all the media, where, you know, shake it, baby, and you handed over what was visibly a $100 bill.
Oh yeah, it was a $100 bill.
Duke was mighty rich. What else? So, like the weapons, the shrink ray. How cool was the shrink ray?
Amazing.
Just blast your enemies a few times until they shrink and you just stomp on them. And Duke Nukem 3D utilized this thing, the vertical shift, really well for, you know, fake looking up and down. You're allowed to look about 45 degrees up and down, where. Like in all those BSP sector engines at the time, you weren't really looking up or down. It was just space skew, and the lines were still only vertical. But it gave you a complete illusion.
One thing you mentioned about the shrink ray and stomping enemies, more first-person shooters should let you shoot while kicking. It's amazing. And kick light switches.
Yes. Oh, that's right. And open doors with kicks, too. The quick button, which I always use, I just bind it on my Q button, so like I constantly just or the enemies like it did the you know this the trick where your regular lizard man I always forget, I just call them like aliens, but they're the lizard man alien, the first basic alien, would randomly have the a really high chance of like begging you not to kill them. After their health is down, and you either kick it in the face or shoot
them,
but if you didn't, there is like a 25% chance that they would go back up. And sort of stuff like that, the Lizardman Commander, they use that sprites being rendered the surfaces really well too, because the sprite would literally, like, it would teleport in space, and the sprite would literally just turn sideways and shrink right in front of your eyes.
And then pop up behind you.
And then pop up somewhere else randomly. Like, first level also has this flat sprite, you know, bridge, which if you do shoot with an RPG or, like, a grenade, it will explode. It will fall.
Which is awesome.
Amazing. Jetpack.
You fly around.
And, of course, the interactivity. Like, you just shoot things, you shoot glasses, they explode, TVs, they explode, you shoot strippers, they explode, enemies appear. Duke always has something to say about, you know, like a bunch of enemies being blown up and stuff. And just, everything. You know, the what did I miss? I missed a lot, I'm sure. But what else? Let's let you talk.
It's got also like I love the fact like you can get the LAPD guys that have been turned into pigs and they're flying around these little spaceships and then you have to shoot them in the spaceship and then they're on the ground and you have to like it's like these two stage enemies.
Absolutely,
I love stuff like that. I love that they were that they had this new engine and they said, well, we've got this new engine. Let's put an earthquake in. Let's put a huge spaceship in. Let's put all this crazy stuff in. There's every single level is a new delight. It's amazing.
Unseen at the time, sector sort of teleportation trick where, you know, you just swim underwater a lot. Just, you know, bam, go into the pool, go through a passage, come out in a different part of the, in, you know, the moving sector is just like screens rising, just the landscape changing, mountains, buildings collapsing, you know, and you live, you know, bloody footprints from going over dead bodies.
I love those. You know,
the water, like your shoes are wet, your boots, the mighty boots are, you know, are wet when you come out of the water. You leave the trail behind you. You can blow up bodies into bits. The ones that are just laying, you know, like laying down. The security cameras that.
I forgot about the security cameras,
which could be destructible if you set the preferences. You can actually adjust the game. There's a flag, destructible cameras on and off, which let you shoot them, and stuff like that. I mean,
there really is nothing bad.
No, there is nothing bad about Duke Nukem 3D except for the commercial episode.
There are some hard bosses, I will say. The bosses are
I
hard,
don't
bosses in
think so anymore.
Yeah, but you've probably played it 1,000 times.
I recently bought, you know, the Megaton edition and I played through it again and I was just like, you know what, I kinda take it back. My only problem is the first boss, they start reusing the first boss as a regular enemy towards the end of episode 2 a lot. Battle Lord.
So
the regular version of it is called Mini Battle Lord. And, you know, he has bullet weapons as well as projectile weapons, like the grenade that he throws.
Yeah.
And you will encounter multiple instances of it towards the end of episode 2, which all takes place in space. And honestly, I used to talk shit about this episode, replay it instantly. It's damn near the best. The second one, maybe not.
Yeah, the second episode is great.
Basically, it paled in comparison visually because it wasn't, you know, it was the space environment. Although, I take it all back now, it's all really cool because, like, you travel between spaceships right in the first or second levels. Like, you fly through space in pods, and there's this, you know, build engine allowed, you know, Duke have, like, train carts and stuff like that. Where it was absolutely amazing. So yeah, and so Duke Nukem 3D, huge hit. Play it if you haven't for some reason. If you have played it, just replay it. Buy the Megaton edition. Why would you pay for that game again if you have played? And I mean, Devolver promised the Steamworks enabled multiplayer quite a while ago. They still haven't delivered, but I'm waiting for that. So buy it there, so you can have my mighty boot up your ass one day.
Good.
And multiplayer in Duke is great as well, although there really haven't been any dedicated multiplayer maps shipped with the game. Unfortunately, you just play in regular levels and a couple of secret levels.
There are so many different maps that you can get, though. There are a million.
Yeah, and if you want like a really frantic Duke match, you know, there's always a stadium.
Yeah.
You know, the three episodes are all good. One on Earth, second in space, third one back on Earth. And of course the fourth, the commercial one, the retail release, Duke Nukem 3D Atomic
Edition. Yeah, that's
yes,
right.
Atomic Edition, which was also known as Plutonium Pack for people who didn't want to buy the retail version but actually, you know, got the shareware and wanted to upgrade. I have a few issues in that. Although the maps are solid, it does the thing a lot where it teleports enemies behind your back. Like, a lot, a lot. Which is something you never should do. It also took a while to figure that one out for first-person shooters for some. Not as long as the platforming, but they used to do that where you clear out the room, you move on, and there's enemies behind you.
They've had some strange ideas.
Yeah, I mean, people were just figuring out the genre. So we'll let that one go. But yeah, basically, get yourself Duke Nukem 3D now, and if you haven't,
And get it on PC. Get it on
oh
PC
yes,
because I've tried the Android version and it's
oh
rubbish.
yes.
I tried the Xbox 360 version. It just doesn't compare. Play it
Play
on
on play
PC.
on
It's where it's
uh,
meant to
play on
be.
PC and don't get any of the console versions. Please, please don't get like the PlayStation or, God forbid, the N64 one. N64 version is a particular atrocity because it doesn't have anything in it due to Nintendo's censorship, and most of the levels are just not in that game at all. And what's the point at that point? Yeah. So, and of course, all the other versions are really, really inferior. So, no, there's even a version for Genesis, which is like a Wolfenstein 3D raycaster. It's not Duke Nukem 3D. It's barely even Wolfenstein 3D. So, but it has a Duke Nukem theme and Lizard Man in there. So that was enough. But yeah, I don't think I don't think I should say
Play the
anything
DOS
else
version.
about Duke Nukem 3D. I have a review of it online, which is also not very extensive. I mean, people know what it is, and I hope if they don't, they're just gonna look it up. Because honestly, Duke Nukem 3D is pretty much the ultimate shooter around that time. The one that has the most fun and quality together. Like, there is no compromise. The game, not only it's a very well-made game, it's also insanely fun to play. The production values are really high, and you can feel the love that the developers put into it.
When I first played Duke Nukem 3D, I wasn't really a big fan of shooters at all. My brother loved Quake and he loved Doom and he loved that. And I played them a bit, but I wasn't a big fan. But in Duke Nukem 3D, suddenly you can run around the level just doing stupid shit, just having fun. And for me, that makes it even better, as an experience. It may not be a better pure shooter than Quake or Doom, but it's a better game because it's more fun, because there's just so much to do. There's so many secrets to find. The weapons are more creative. So, yeah,
Yeah,
great game.
absolutely.
And honestly, if you're listening to this and you haven't played Duke 3D, you've got real
Yeah,
problems.
absolutely. Yeah, it's highly recommended. Two thumbs up, whatever. Like that game, don't miss out on it if somehow you have.
And if you don't like the blood and guns and everything, you can get the Caribbean version with water pistols and
Oh
him
yes,
kicking with his sandal.
amazing. I mean, I think we should cover Sunstorm things like separately in one go, because they made awesome add-ons for all good build engine games basically. Okay, so that's 1996. Basically, was the year of Duke, and we're moving into 1997, and we have Duke 3D is largely successful. And we have a couple of games follow up to it. So the first one was Blood. And I'm not gonna lie, I'm gonna say that Blood is probably my favorite DOS first person shooter to play. Hands down, took everything that was great about Duke 3D and made it even better, in my opinion. Like, so everything I just said about Duke, just take that and multiply it by 10. First of all, Blood also had quantity, like over
Oh
Duke as
man,
well. Like, it had more of everything,
it's
it seemed.
enormous.
More interactivity. Again, like I said before, I unpacked it. Like, instead of 30 things that the protagonist says, it says at least 1,000 things. Like, there's literally a line for everything. Just if you let Caleb stay still, he'll sing one of like 20 or like Broadway tunes.
He does. He sings like classic songs like It's a Long Way to Tipperary and stuff like that. It's hilarious.
Strangers of the Night, which he like forgets the lyrics
Yeah.
to halfway through, which is, it's brilliant. Also, the brilliant voice casting. Like, that guy is so much fun to listen to.
Yeah.
And Blood is took this is also has like this really weird setting, sort of nightmarish.
I think it has a much stronger setting than Duke. It very much it embraces its setting more wholeheartedly.
Oh yeah, absolutely, because it's fantastical and it's very fleshed out too. With that really well done, like, Blood takes set piece design even further in Duke. I mean, who doesn't remember the train or the carnival level?
Oh man, I love kicking the heads into the mouth. That's hilarious.
Oh god, also very hard too, to get all of them in, just to get a bonus.
It's worth it though.
But Blood takes the level interactivity and the set pieces are, I mean, again, like, carnival. Everybody remembers the carnival level. It was so much fun with, like, merry-go-rounds and all those, like, interactive sort of mini-games that you could play. Or the train. You start out on the moving train and you move back from cart to cart to eventually blow up the engine. And then, you know, the train is actually going somewhere.
And the best thing is the train crashes and explodes into the next level.
Yes.
Which is,
I mean,
how it should be.
It's just amazing. You're kicking zombies. The weapons. Like, I can't even begin about the weapons. All the weapons are awesome. Right from the get-go.
The weapons are amazing.
First weapon, pitchfork. You open up with a pitchfork, right? Which is an awesome melee weapon. And then you instantly go into the flare gun, which every weapon in Blood also has two modes.
Yes, which is I think it's one of the very first games that had alternative firing
yes.
modes. I don't know if it's the first, but it's one of them.
It's one of the first, and use it really, really well. So the flare gun, you shoot a flare into the enemy, and you know, eventually they catch fire and run around screaming. Shotgun, which is the alternate fire mode, is, you know, both barrels at the same time, which is insanely powerful. One of the most powerful weapons in the game. You get
yeah.
almost right off the fucking boat. Then you have
Tommy gun,
which does the gangster spread, the alternate fire, where just 180 fire spread. You have dynamite with a varying, you know, with a meter of how far you want to throw it, which is pretty awesome, you know, that you can blow up in your hand if you wait so long.
And if you use the alt fire, it doesn't explode on contact. It waits until the fuse is burnt down, so
yes,
you can set little traps
great.
For enemies and stuff like that.
And it also has like three other different explosives under that same button, where it's like a mine
yeah.
or like a Duke Nukem 3D style of
A remote detonator.
Like stuff like that. The aerosol spray that Caleb brings a lighter to and just turns into a flamethrower, which also can be used as a grenade in the alternate fire mode.
Yeah, we used to do that at school, so it probably actually taught us some bad stuff.
Yes, I didn't learn it from Blood. I don't think, but I also used to do that. It works. But kids, don't try it at home.
Do not.
No, please. I don't want to be responsible. I am not liable. Ben and I are not liable for any consequences that this podcast might have on the easily impressionable young child. Don't sue us, please. What else? The voodoo doll.
Voodoo doll. Oh, man. I love the thing that I love most about that is that there's no one else around. He sticks
yeah,
himself.
Yeah, he stabs
pin,
himself.
Which is hilarious.
Also, like a very powerful second alternate mode attack that just kills everybody on screen, basically.
And uses the voodoo doll up.
Life leech, or the staff that you can drop. Like, all those other things which will come very in handy, because Blood is also very, very difficult, in a way.
It's a game that rewards you for playing carefully,
yes,
I think.
Yes, not only carefully. I mean, you can play somewhat recklessly. If my thing about Blood... Here's the thing about Blood. If you got all your weapons, you know, in some shooters, you'll play some shooters and you stick to like three main weapons, like a rocket launcher, a shotgun, and whatever else. In Blood, it's essential, especially on higher difficulties, to learn to manage all your weapons.
Absolutely.
It will make good use of everything if you know which situation to apply it in.
Absolutely. I love that the pitchfork is useful throughout the, like, as long as you see a zombie and he's by himself or there's only two of them, you can kill him with a, you know, you can take him with a pitchfork, so save your ammo for the tougher enemies. It really encourages that sort of mindset.
Absolutely. And also, you know, like on higher difficulties, the enemies change. You know, like you play on easy and none of the cultists ever like throw a stick of dynamite at you, but like you play on like a third or up or higher level of difficulty, and you know, you just like you're constantly bombarded with like everything and stuff like that. But you know, also game has a ton of levels, all really well done too. Like there's a lot, there's
and
like,
all filled with secrets.
Oh yes, absolutely. There's like five filled with five secrets. Episodes five, is it,
I think,
in
so.
The final release, like with the extra episode, with the commercial episode, there's five. And they're just packed with goodness. Insane amount of references. Like, taken from Duke 3D, the game has insane amount of references for, like, everything from A to Z grade movies to Shakespeare to Poe to Lovecraft to video games. One of my favorite secrets is, you know, the Duke Nukem torso. The final is like, shake it, baby.
Which they did in Duke Nukem with the Doom guy in the church. It's like they kind of carry it on, which is fun.
And you know, like you can kick zombies' heads, which like one of the multiplayer levels is actually built on. It's a big soccer / football field where you just you kick zombies' heads into goals and actually score points. The designs are amazing. Like they used, it's mostly you know, stop motion puppets for enemies, and unlike in Witchhaven, they actually look really, really good.
They actually look fantastic, even up close. They look
amazing.
Yeah, they look really good. The gargoyles, like when you fight the first boss and he gets real close to you, he's creepy.
Yes, he is creepy. Like all the enemies, the hellhounds or whatever they are, like just designs are great. The sound design is amazing. Music is fantastic. The CD music is great and
The music
creepy
is sensational.
And
absolutely,
if you don't have the CD in, it switches to a MIDI score, which is almost just as good. It's a neat feature. Like that, and God, what else? You know, additional build features are like I have. You know, it has stacked sectors,
yes,
which is sometimes a bit buggy.
Yeah,
and you know, it has voxel objects, often destructible for level objects and weapon pickups and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's nice. You've got stuff like. You've got gravestones and stuff like that, which instead of being a flat sprite, you can actually go around them, and it's fantastic.
It's
use of voxels.
Amazing. I'm sure, like I can talk about Blood forever, just because that's I like Blood so much that every year I just start it up and I, you know, spend a few days playing through the whole thing. Does not get old.
I've been playing a bit of it recently, just as a catch up, and it really surprises you. Like, I mean, you know, you've played it before, but you play it again, and it surprises you how much fun it can be a second time.
It's
I will say
really
this, though,
fun.
The bosses, some of the bosses, not all of the bosses, man, they can take a lot of damage. They can take some punishment.
Yeah, I'd say. But again, you got your life leech, you got the staff, just drop it, life leech, you know, run away. You basically, that's, you know, if you learn to manage, I mean, yes, on higher difficulties, there's also can be that where you're literally just attacked by two or more stone gargoyles.
Oh.
not fun, those places.
No.
Those places aren't fun, but again, save up your ammo, save up your bonuses, and also some really, really cool, like, just smallest little touches from things in interactive things in levels, like bonuses that like make the enemy's bullets reflect back at them, you know, stuff like that.
Oh yeah, reflective shots. Some of the pickups, oh man, I love the guns akimbo where you pick up,
yes,
there's nothing better than having two Tommy guns and being trapped in a room full of zombies.
Yes.
Oh man, That's the best.
It's great. Everything from like enemy design to level design, and there's an insane amount of levels and art. Like, there's the amount of just textures for everything is great. The environments are really detailed, like the mansion level with all the books and paintings and like animated stuff and creepy music, just so good. Like, it's insanely good.
It's very harmonious. Yes. The whole experience is very, there's a lot of synergy between all the elements. Yes. Which not many games can do that as well as Blood does it.
Yes. So I recommend Blood even more than I recommend Duke Nukem, honestly. It's not maybe not going to be as easy for people who don't play old school first person shooters. It's a bit on the difficult side, not impossible, but I would say you know, it's available on good old games, so unfortunately it's the only way to get it is to run it in DOSBox. Not the very optimal, but
it does the job.
Still, it's a really, really fun game. It's, I especially consider it fun just because very few games are as fun as, yeah, Blood.
I think
I've heard Blood described as a first-person stalker rather than a first-person shooter, i.e. that you, instead of just rushing in like you do in Doom and running around with rocket launchers, you really have to think about how you play. And I think that really adds another element.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Like, it's Blood is fantastic. Like, if I was making a top 10 first-person shooters for DOS list, which I will, maybe, at one point, Blood is guaranteed to be on top of it. I can't, like, as much as I love, like, Doom 2 is probably one of my favorite DOS games ever, and probably is my favorite first-person shooter, but my favorite one to play is Blood. Blood is a fabulous game. My guess is you recommend it as well.
Absolutely. You can't... And the thing is, nothing really compares in modern games to Blood. You can't find an experience at all.
It's the best out of a classic FPS.
They tried making Blood 2. Blood 2 sucks.
Yeah, don't get Blood 2. Not only doesn't work, it never worked, and now it works even less all those years later. It's god-awful.
But no, Blood is great. I think Blood is pretty much unequaled in terms of what it attempted to do and how well it managed to do it. In terms of horror in games. I mean, it's not a horror game at all.
No.
But it's set in a horror setting.
Yes.
So
absolutely. Yeah. Like, in between just the designs, like, just the interiors of houses, they're just so unique. Like, the sort of darker, reddish sort of things was like an interesting art direction just in the whole thing. And it was consistent with the puppets that they used and everything. Like, it all blended together really, really well. Like, nothing ever stuck out, and they really knew how to do it, like, perfectly. And you know, you can have a level that's like an inside of something.
Oh, the human body.
Yeah, it's I don't know how human it is, but yeah, it's definitely a bunch of insides.
Yes. Which reminds me of the very, very start of the last episode of Doom. The third episode of Doom.
Yeah, kind of like that, but with like a lot of moving parts.
And the walls bleed, if I remember right.
Oh yeah. The walls bleed, and there's always constant like digestion / chewing noises. It's interesting. So that's Blood. Play it now.
Be warned, there's lots of blood in the game.
Yes. Yeah.
Funny though.
Ironically. Also, 1997, tail end of 1997, brought us the 3D Realms published Shadow Warrior. And here, I mean, Shadow Warrior is a decent game, and I always felt that it actually overshadowed Blood when it came out.
Which is a real shame.
Rather unfairly, yeah, too, because Shadow Warrior is nowhere near as good of a game as Blood is. Here's the thing about Shadow Warrior. Production value is great. We now have lots of improvements on the build engine.
Oh, man, they did
proper
so much.
Stacked sectors, non-glitchy. Voxels out the ass, you know, all over. destructible polygons. You know, so now you can have one of the features, you would jump like in a tank of sorts or bulldozer and like knock down a wall and still sort of ride. I mean, very primitive, but you know, you could be in a boat. You could actually drive, you know, tanks and bulldozers and stuff like that. Everything seemed to be rendered in 3D in that game. Enemies are pre-rendered 3D things. Massive weapons like a rocket launcher with like third mode would be
nuclear
like
explosion,
a mini nuke with like a countdown, and like you shoot it and you just, you know, whole ass, and then like it would have like a little like green emissions in the area for like forever afterwards. You know, you have you know, rabbits running around that would multiply. And but and I want to put those things up front. A lot of blatant humorous racism in Shadow Warrior does not bother me per se. Some people really sort of hold it against that game. I mean, it's just, I'd say just like silly bad, but I just think it's too stupid to be offensive.
I think it's a weak thing to rely on for humor, if nothing else, you know. It's a
It was bad, and I felt like it was never really belong. It doesn't really feel like it belongs in that game either. Like, it feels like they tagged it on under, like, 3D Realm. That team that was making it tagged it on under, like, 3D Realm's pushing them. Be like, oh, Duke Nukem was fun because of all this stupid shit. Let's do, you know, that. Because nothing in the game is really that humorous.
No, it all feels very forced, doesn't it? You find a secret area and he goes, oh, ancient Chinese secret. And you just go, well, anyone.
Oh, just like a Duke Nukem. You're like, okay, guy.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just stupid.
Oh, you're a teddy grasshopper. It's like, you're like, really? like, you don't mess with Lo Wang. Yeah. Just stuff like that seems really forced. And,
yeah.
And other things that seems really forced, well, not forced, I'm sure they took great pride in it. Game has really complex 3D platforming. Like,
yes.
Magic carpet to magic carpet, flying around the mountain, jumping on rocks that are, like, collapsing, going down. None of it. None of it is any sort of fun. It's awful. Oh, God. One thing about Blood, I'm sorry to go back, the help screen. Can I just mention the Blood help screen?
Oh, yes, the help
which
screen!
Which is...
Yeah, that's amazing.
You can spend a half hour on all the help screens with the most amusing animations in every page. I wish Gibbs did that more. Can we have more? If any developers are listening, the next help screen that you make, or like a credit screen, just make shit happen. Make amusing animations so I wouldn't be bored sitting through credits. And stuff like this. I mean, I...
Burn some mimes up,
basically. From any animations to, like, the second screen has all kinds of gaming parodies, from Asteroids to Donkey Kong to Pac-Man to, you know, Caleb just running over the monolith logo, and the last screen that's hidden, it's identical to the previous one. He, like, runs and trips on the eye and gets up and goes. I mean, Jesus Christ. None of that in Shadow Warrior.
Man, I'd forgotten about that help screen. I'm glad you reminded me. That's...
And also, another things about it are, like, the balance. There is no balance,
there is no balance.
In Shadow Warrior.
There is none.
Weapons are all over the place, ranging from useless to very powerful for no reason, with multiple fire modes that are mostly you're going to not ever use. Insanely powerful enemies versus really weak enemies. Awful, awful bosses.
Boring bosses, too.
That are really easy and do nothing. And one of them, of course, is a
sumo wrestler
that farts fire. How creative.
Yeah.
Also, some weird elements that also seem to be tagged on, like bathing naked anime girls.
I think they were just trying to one-up Duke Nukem like they tried with everything else and failed.
Yeah. A lot of it, it seems like it's like, I mean, cool, like the controllable turrets and all that stuff is really fun. Also, the game's really short.
Yeah.
What? How many levels does it have? Like 18? The whole game, a commercial release.
There's There's 4 for the shareware and 18 for the full, I think.
Okay, so, yeah, 22 altogether. And some of them are...
Which is nothing.
No, especially comparing with Blood, that has like 5 episodes chock full of levels with like with like several secret levels in each episode. Yeah. So, technically, it's probably the most impressive build game.
Yeah, some of the technology they did, they had like reflective floors. They had, there's this,
yes,
the boat ride that they've mentioned about ends up in a whirlpool, and you jump out of this, which was for me really cool. You know, this instead of just having like, you know, get off the boat.
It's all has really cool stuff. The RC cars, the puzzle where you have to control cars while looking at the monitor to get the key out right in the beginning. Stacked sectors. The game uses stacked sectors a lot. You can see different structures from, you know, like pools and stuff like that, or go like inside, you know, the various ventilation shafts where appear to be one on top of the other.
Yeah.
And unlike in Blood, it wouldn't glitch and would actually work really fine. Also, the art style is very consistent. Besides the anime girls, where the 3D environments blended well with 3D enemies.
The forest looks stupid. The bits where they tried to put trees in the game.
Yeah.
There is one thing that really impresses me, and I'm still not even sure how they did it. There's water and a shoreline, and the water kind of laps and moves up and down the shoreline in this kind of smooth curve. I have no idea how they did that. It looks cool. I've never seen any other game do it like that. So technologically, they pushed the engine, but it's just a pity that they didn't bring an amazing game with it.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate because it's the most definitely the most advanced build game, but yeah, the game Blood is much superior, and it's a shame that it's been overshadowed by it because Blood did not have 3D Realms attached to it, unlike you know, Shadow Warrior could be built as from the developers of Duke Nukem 3D, even though it really wasn't.
Yeah, although some of the team members that worked on Shadow Warrior, I remember just as they were finishing up Duke Nukem 3D, they were talking about... There's somewhere I showed you on Twitter a fair while ago, you can actually read the updates.
Yeah, they have, like, you can actually read that where like, they actually, the moment in time where Ken and everybody else from 3D Realms comes in is actually later on in development. Like, you can read the diaries. So, you know, and with Blood, it was, like, completely kind of different. They were their own team, you know, working under 3D Realms, and then eventually Monolith bought them out, and they didn't have any involvement from 3D Realms whatsoever at that point. So, which in fact probably worked a lot better for that game to make it more consistent.
I feel
that Shadow Warrior being inconsistent in many things is probably 3D Realms' fault, because they wanted to market it as a follow-up to Shadow Warrior.
Duke Nukem 3D.
I mean, oh yeah, Duke Nukem 3D. It's 7:30 in the morning, people.
Yes,
it is.
For you.
Okay, good. So, another wonderful thing. In 1997 was a big year for Build, because another game that hit was Xatrix Entertainment's Redneck Rampage.
I love Redneck Rampage. I replayed it as recently as last Christmas. I sat in a tent for 3 days and replayed Redneck Rampage on my laptop, and I love Redneck Rampage.
Oh, good.
I don't know why people like it less than some of the other Build Engine games. I don't know if it's because it's quite hard, or there's not many enemies, or...
I can think of a few things.
Well...
My thing is, I love Redneck Rampage. First of all, one, let's say Redneck Rampage is clearly built on top of Duke Nukem 3D.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt.
As much to retain its modern capability.
Yeah.
You know, unlike Blood or Shadow Warrior that are both hard-coded. But one thing about Redneck Rampage that separates it from other Build games is it's built to run in SVGA. So all the sprites actually rendered at higher res. So all the elements of the interface and the enemies are made to run in 640 or 480 and above. So they're twice the size of any of the other sprites. And textures. Textures are gigantic for Build Engine and Redneck Rampage.
Yeah.
And stuff like this. The... one thing about Redneck Rampage that separates it from Duke and stuff like that, I think, is also the emphasis of levels is on exploration.
Yeah, they're really big outdoor levels. They're enormous.
They're big, and you have to look through them. Like, that's one thing I think that turns a lot of people off, where you have to traverse those distances to find a key that was hidden behind a movable wall, like a wardrobe, like somewhere. Like, they make you look through things to progress. It's basically your linear progression, where you find, like an old school shooter, where you find the key to open a door to progress or a switch, but they make you like explore by hiding things. I think it's, for many people, that's a turn off.
See, I'm the kind of gamer that likes mazes in games. Like, if I'm playing an adventure game and I find a maze, I happily get my pen and paper out and get excited. So yeah, I think the biggest...
No, you suck. No, it's all... my biggest, how can you?
My biggest problem with the...
Masochist?
is they've got these keys that they call skeleton keys, and all three of them look the same. Yes. So you have no idea which key goes to which door. That's my major problem with the hiding the keys in Redneck Rampage. So you end up sort of double-tracking and triple-tracking and you know... But I love exploring these huge areas, you know? I love it.
Oh, yes. It's great. They're big. They're beautiful environments. They're really unique.
Yeah.
The soundtrack is
man,
amazing.
The soundtrack is amazing.
On all kinds of levels.
Oh, I love the soundtrack. And I often still get my Redneck Rampage CD and chuck it in the CD player and rock out to some Roger Nixon. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's great. And, you know, you also have things like you can ride a motorcycle.
That was in the expansion. In the sequel, sorry. In Rides Again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In the sequel?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Never mind. I'm taking this back. Another thing that probably turns some people off is that treacherous thing where you have to hit your buddy, your brother Bubba with a crowbar at the end of each level to exit level. You can accidentally kill the guy.
You can.
And not finish the level. So I think, like, sometimes it does happen. We're like at the end, you're like running and gunning, and like you're trying to make it. Sometimes you like, you know, get him with something, with some weapon, and
which is annoying, but
it's sad. Another selling point of Redneck Rampage, of course, is air quotes, adult humor.
Oh yeah, it's very childish.
Which basically is nothing but just cursing. You know, it's just, you know, a lot of redneck jokes. That's not, you know, if you haven't figured out from the title, lots of southern environments. The story is the aliens. Also, wisely, like I feel it was always clever. Like they actually explain to you why all the enemies look the same. Is
yes,
because aliens cloned all of your bad neighbors, basically. You know, and it's like a redneck with a shotgun, just a redneck with a revolver.
There's a dog.
I'm going to get you.
I'm going to get you,
there's
boy.
There's a dog.
The dogs suck. I hate the dogs. I'll say this. As soon as I see a dog, I get terrified.
A slutty cheerleader, a sheriff.
The cheerleader is in Rides Again.
A variety of aliens.
I love when you kill the first alien, you actually... take his severed arm and use it as a weapon. I love that.
Yeah, also very difficult enemies too, I will give you that. A lot of them, really powerful and can take a lot of damage if you don't have any kind of good weapon.
Especially if you come up against the Dominatrix later in the game.
Yes, that one is there, where you get like, the titty gun.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of it's crass. Also has the most amazing health system.
Oh yeah,
based on
fantastic
drinking and snacks. The more you drink, you can regain health from drinking, but it will fill up your drunkenness meter. And you know the controls will become more screwed up the drunker you are. Of course, you have to eat dry snacks to raise your health as well, and to counteract the moonshine or beer that you have.
And if you eat too many, you fart and enemies can hear you coming.
Yes, it's quite something. I mean, it's not an easy game. enemies are difficult, and the exploration can get annoying to you, like if you miss something in one branch of level, because maps are usually sort of like central locations with leading to a bunch of different branches that are also quite extensive.
Yeah.
Like you miss something and you won't know what to do, you will have to backtrack all the way back to this different location. Just like eventually, like there are some points where you kill off all the enemies and just end up running around the level here and there. And because it's not linear, the levels are a lot of times not linear. You'll just end up going all over the place to see what you missed, and that can get annoying.
I think the funniest thing about this is that the worst two levels in the game are the sewer level and the asylum level, which are the really claustrophobic ones, and they end up huge big mazes, which are just awful. And I think they're probably the only bits in the game that you could accuse of being really badly designed, whereas the big open levels are quite nice to play. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's I'd say... I guess the sequel is not the Sandstorm title. It's actually Exatrix title.
Yes,
one of the few Build Engine games that actually got a sequel. So a sequel and an expansion.
Yeah.
So we can mention that one as well, which is also just as good, I think, if not better. I mean, the environments are kind of different in a way. Essentially, basically the same game.
The expansion adds new levels, which are actually pretty well designed. It adds a few new enemies. I think there's alligators in there as well, which they didn't have before. But it's pretty much the same game.
Well, I actually say that because we covered all the games that were Sunstorm Entertainment made the expansions for, we can probably cover Sunstorm now. Sunstorm Good. Entertainment made expansion packs for Duke Nukem 3D, all commercial. Duke Nukem 3D, Blood, Shadow Warrior, and Redneck Rampage. All of them are quite often just as good as the original game. Of course, my favorite being Duke Nukem Caribbean.
How amazing!
Which
an
is
idea.
Mind-blowingly amazing. Replaced all of the graphics with some kind of vacation-themed.
Oh yeah. Water pistols
thing. The water pistols,
Hawaiian
water
shirts.
Shotguns, the coconuts. Duke itself is now wearing a Hawaiian shirt and shorts and flip flops.
He kicks with a sandal on his foot.
And
I love it.
All the monsters are wearing vacation. All the monsters are on vacation as well.
Yeah.
It's with levels taking place in hotels and such.
Instead of keys, you get like a Visa card, and yeah,
oh yes, it's great. Also, Sunstorm before that did Duke It Out in DC, which I don't think is actually that good. I think good idea, but I think actually having levels tied down to American landmarks sort of impaired the level design a bit. And you know, it's just landmarks, so it's a lot of white walls and. You know, like White House,
and it's stuff you've
it's
seen
building,
before.
You know,
it's not new.
Yeah,
and creative.
So it's kind of it's not as inventive. Now for Blood, we have Cryptic Passage, which can get a bit mazy and not as interactive, but the levels are actually really, really good. I feel Cryptic Passage is actually a really good expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow Warrior, I always forget which one they did. I don't know if it's Wanton Destruction. I forget. There's two Shadow Warrior expansions which I don't think were ever released, actually.
I think they weren't released until years and years later, were they?
Yeah. So, I'll be honest with you, I haven't played either because I'm not really that much into... not much into Shadow Warrior. The original levels that it provided were quite enough.
I can't blame you.
Which, by the way, we haven't mentioned it. I'd say, do you recommend Shadow Warrior?
Yeah, but I'd say play Duke, Blood, and Redneck
Rampage.
Check out
the Shareware, actually.
Yeah, the Shareware is the best part of the game.
Shareware is basically everything what you need to know about that game. And actually, you know what? The full game, I think, is still available on Steam for free, so...
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did that the other... A little while.
Yeah, you got a Shadow Warrior Classic. So if you listen to it right now, just go on your Steam account and add it. You know, it's
costs
free.
Nothing.
Oh, you know, it's not going to get any better than this. So you'll get to check out the whole thing for free.
I'd play Blood, Duke, and Redneck Rampage before I played Shadow Warrior.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because I feel that, yeah.
Yes. And so Redneck Rampage also has Sunstorm expansion.
They did...
Sucking Grits.
Did they do Sucking Grits on Route 66?
Yes. Yeah. Which is also really, really good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So, but like Redneck Rampage basically has two games and a really cool expansion. So, if you can get around the whole concept, you know, if you like the exploration element and difficulty, then yeah, definitely, I'd say all of it is very much worth it.
I think Redneck Rampage is a little bit like Blood. You have to learn to manage your resources. Like, you learn to sort of manage your health with the snacks and the alcohol, and you have to save. I always save, like, you save weapons for the, because you know there's going to be tough enemies, and as soon as I see a dog, I panic. There's simply not enough hunting rifle ammunition to take out all the dogs in the game. But yeah, you get, I think Redneck Rampage Rides Again, the sequel, probably shows off the build engine a little bit better, whether or not
it's because it has like tornadoes, yeah, and the motorcycles and like,
yeah, that, and so, and the airboat and stuff like that. But probably, mm-hmm, Redneck Rampage itself is probably the best, mm-hmm, best place to start. So yeah,
I'd
cool
say.
Games. If you can handle the redneck jokes, basically,
yeah, pretty much,
and the challenging difficulty, because they are tough.
And at that point, we, like, with Redneck Rampage Ride Again, we moved on to 1998, where by that point, we, yeah, already had Quake 2 and everything, and
yeah,
things started going away. Started going away from the 2D DOS games. People wanted hardware acceleration and internet play and stuff like this. So, really, from that point on, we only have two more titles. They're both budget releases, and actually, yeah, I forgot. I missed Extreme Pain Brawl, didn't I?
Yes.
Yes. The reason I missed Extreme Pain Brawl is because I pretend that it doesn't exist. I'm not really gonna talk about it much, except for it's a broken game that doesn't work and it's awful, and it's considered to be one of the worst first-person shooters of all time for a reason, and that those are the reasons.
I believe I read that PC Gamer got a letter from one of the developers after they reviewed it quite badly for obvious reasons, stating that the publisher had only given them 2 weeks to build the game.
That makes a lot of sense.
That tells you everything you need to know.
Oh my god, that puts so many things into perspective. Poor guy.
The people that published it eventually got merged into Activision Value, who release some of the worst games in the entire world. I have some of them in my collection of weird, obscure shit, and I can tell you they are all unplayable. So there you go.
Yeah, let's not talk about Extreme Pain Brawl.
Let's
not recommend it. Don't even go anywhere near close. If you see it somewhere in a CDK store, a box, please run and set the building on fire to cleanse the evil. Because that game is, you know, the world is the worst place because of Extreme Pain Brawl.
I think the whole problem is, even with the idea of a paintball simulation, is that paintballing is a simulation of armed combat. And first-person shooters, paintball takes away all of the interest, like the violence and stuff like that, and first person shooters are the opposite simulation that take away all the physical stuff. So put those two simulations together and you have no redeeming aspects whatsoever. So never make a paintball simulation, anybody, ever. It's that simple.
Yeah, it's that plus, you know, it's a bad game. So that's that. So
right, good.
1998 bought a very special game to me that is very polarizing in many ways. It's a budget release, NAMM. And I'll put it right out there. I fucking love that game. I love that game. I mean, in 1998, people really didn't care anymore. But basically, NAMM was a sequel to the Duke Nukem 3D Total Conversion Platoon. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what it was. It was another Duke Nukem 3D Total Conversion. Nothing has really changed from Duke Nukem 3D down to where a lot of the art from Duke Nukem 3D was recycled. Mm. Like, all of the enemies are clearly based on Duke animations. And, you know, the hands are still Duke Nukem hands on weapons and stuff like that. And it's very, very amateurish. I think the only thing that's actually changed in code is the grenade explodes after 8 seconds.
What about...
They must have the remote detonator.
They've added stuff like being able to get people to follow you, though. So they've done a little
bit. That's in Conscript. That's in Duke Nukem scripting.
Ah, right, okay.
Which is why it's done so half-assedly. Like, if you want to call an airstrike, you have to sit down and use the person, and it's will a give like silly. A special thing. And like at the same time, like they also didn't you know, like you have those pickups, you know, like ammo for it for a turret on top of the on top of the thing, and like all it does is gives you a different value for like one item. So in the manual they explain to you that's all just coded by the army, so the enemy wouldn't know what it is, but it's only in reality just like in the script they check, oh, you have 47 of that, oh, that must be ammo. You know, if it's like 36 of that, it's something else.
Wow.
Like it's a mine detector, you know. It's stuff like that. So they do those things. That's just basically total conversion. But with all the limits that Build Engine did, that it put you in the middle of a war. Like somehow they just made it with huge maps with airstrikes and things, just like, it was anything but fair. It never intends to be fair. You would go around, just explosions start happening. You trip on mines. Like, you step, you like walk around, you go around the tree, and you hear a click. And then, you know, if you sit down and you press use, you have like a somewhat of a chance of actually disarming the mine and stuff like that. Enemies are, you know, will see you and will kill you, and there's a lot of them. Most of the time, you'll just spend running through the jungle and just like having the shit air strike out of you. For all the limitations, also the maps are like bombed out cities or
jungles.
You know, again, the jungle. Yeah. The jungle. It's basically Platoon the game again.
Yeah.
Just like the original Total Conversion was, and the supervisor in it was Dan Snyder, the guy who made Marine Doom.
Oh, right.
Although I'm not sure how much of involvement he actually had, but his name is plastered in the intro, and stuff like that. So it has two episodes of really cool maps, and it's not fair. It's difficult, and it looks like shit often. Well, not like shit, but it just doesn't look professional.
It looks very amateur, and also the music is some of the worst music. Like
music, shut it off. Just go on the setup. I never played with music. Once I tried, I never tried again. It's meant to be played in silence, so for the whole experience. And like you sit down and you hear the Viet Cong, and you're like, oh my god, like you know, Charlie, 9 o'clock, and like you do freak out. Like if you can forget about the graphics. It does put you in a very sort of cool war environment, if you forgive the engine limitations. Like in most of the woods, it's just the wall with a, you know, texture on it and stuff like that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's what it was. I personally like it, and I will highly recommend it. And I know people who will do completely the opposite and treat that game like Extreme Pain Brawl, and... I'll be honest with you, you know, I'm not one of those people. I don't share those opinions. I think that game deserves a chance. And yes, it was amateurish, but, you know, whatever. So were many other things. Like, it's a fun game to play.
Yeah, it does at least a couple of things that are worthy of at least pointing out, even if somebody can't stick with the game long enough to find them. There's a bit where you have to jump on a boat, and the boat takes you down the river, much like you do, like... in other Build Engine games, but you can jump off the boat at any point, and instead of like shooting down the enemies, you can run along the shoreline, and they've put mines along the shore. They've actually expected you to jump off the boat if you want and sneak up on the enemies, mm-hmm. which I think is, you know, it's non-linearity in design, which I find very, you know, that's fantastic. That's exactly what I want from a game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The start of level 5 is the most... intense thing in any game ever. Your helicopter. Oh, is it
like after the crashed helicopter?
Oh man, it is insane.
Yeah, that is surrounded by enemies.
One gun,
stuff like that. yeah, and also the game has most amateurish voiceovers.
Oh
ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awful. But ignoring all of that, the game is actually really, really fun and very difficult. It's a challenge game.
It is really.
You challenge yourself when you play. It's not made to be to be like a fun romp like Duke Nukem was. Like, no, this game, like, you do fight for your survival.
Absolutely.
Like, legitimately. And oh, I sort of applaud the effort. It's like, for the outdated technology that was used, it was used very, very well.
Except for the sniper rifle, which has a scope that does not magnify. It is pointless. That is dumb.
It's just a sprite that goes over your screen.
It's stupid.
You know, and all the weapons are Duke Nukem weapons, just, you know, reskinned.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you never, it's a war game, but you never reload any of them except for, you know, the whatever it is, the MP5
yeah.
or whatever. So, and that was followed up by the same team a year later in 1999 with World War II GI. And everything good that I said about NAM, I'm going to take away.
It's not. It's nowhere near. The graphics are slightly better.
The graphics are.
I think, but other than that,
I think they're awful. I think, at least the hand-drawn and recycled textures, in favor of bland. Basically, World War II GI tried to do. You know, NAM was the platoon in the game. This was Saving Private Ryan the game.
Yeah, it really was.
Right off the boat, like you stormed in Normandy, like you climbed for guns. It's basically the same concept. You fight for survival in the World War II environments, and everything else is exactly the same. The engine is slightly modified this time. There's a lot more customization going on, and all the graphics are high res. Impossible to play on anything under like Pentium 200
yeah.
for a DOS game. So many sprites and everything going on that the game just holds to a crawl on just about, like, the game was choking up in 800 by 600 on my Pentium 100, like, back then. It's yeah, but I don't like it. Like, I think the graphics, it's I like the World War II setting and I like the sort of the similar concept, but to me, just something about that game just rubs me the wrong way. Like, I'm not a fan of that game.
It's got this morale meter, so every time anybody dies, which happens a lot, your morale goes down and your aim it decreases, which is the stupidest thing
yeah.
in the entire thing, because not only has the game just gotten harder because your teammates are dying, but now you have more trouble aiming. It's ridiculous. It's redundant game design.
I would recommend NAM, but I would not recommend World War II GI at all.
I would recommend NAM reluctantly, as long as people are warned, like, they know what they're getting into, but there's nothing really redeeming about
yes.
World War II GI.
No, and that really brings us to an
That's
end
it.
Of commercially released... build engine games. There were, of course, a few curiosities that you can stumble upon. One of them is early Duke Nukem 3D Alpha, now Christian the Lame Duke, available on the 3D Realms website. Shows you very early stage of the development, both the engine and the game. And it's weird because it's basically Duke Nukem 2 in 3D. Humor is not there. The enemies are robots. You pick up cola for power ups. It has like some neat features, like the reflective. It has reflective water pools and stuff like that. It never got used in destructible environments. But in the year and a half that it took for release, like you can tell everything has changed. Like, it's good to check it out just for contrast, just to see, like, oh my god, how much has changed throughout the development process of that game. Game was taking a completely different direction.
I have to say, I'm really glad that they changed the setting from the platformer games.
Oh, absolutely.
There's nothing really interesting about those platformers in terms of setting.
No. There is that. Another thing is a demo of unreleased... game Fate.
Fate,
from the developers of Witchhaven. And the graphics are much more, in that case, you know, it's all like 3D stuff, pre-rendered.
They're all
3D stuff.
Pre-rendered,
it looks
yeah.
very consistent in everything. And it looks like the controls haven't changed much since Witchhaven days, and
it
looks like the game is not fun to play at all.
It's probably for the best that they laid it to rest and never made it into a game. Just from watching someone play it, it looks effectively unplayable.
The very early, not even Alpha, just, I don't know, somebody spent like a month trying to do the corridor 7 sequel called, surprisingly, Corridor 8. And, yeah, that didn't really go far. And yeah, nothing interesting there, really. So, that's... I think we covered everything,
that's
right?
The build
like,
engine.
Everything on the...
Yeah.
That's the build engine. Another thing that's very curious and I everybody should consider doing is the Ken Silverman's build engine tech demo, which is available at advsys.net/ken/build. No, whatever. advsys.net/ken and go in the build there, go to build source code and download the archive and play with the tech demo that shows off all the features. Also has like Ken's custom modular music format and insane amount of secrets in a gigantic map showing off all the features as a game. Basically, it's a gigantic map with different sections showing off all kinds of features, secrets, and it's really, you know, fun music, and it's fun to just explore. It's an exploration map where you, as you go and discover different secrets, different doors, you get to explore different features of the engine. It's very cleverly done. You know, you would go, you'd go for like a couple of doors, and bam, there'll be a subway train. And you go through like a revolving door, and you go in, and all of a sudden there's voxel enemies that are, you know, worms from the Team 17 games.
Oh man, I love worms.
Yeah, and like they die, and like wah, wah. And like there's also the demo even comes with a multiplayer with the support for split screen multiplayer if you like.
Oh,
know what,
wow.
The keys are. It's insane, and like, it has its own like mod music format that Ken designed himself, and it plays this catchy tune throughout the whole thing. You know, secrets that will kill you. Flip the switch, the gun will kill you. Like you get the gun with like bouncing weapons. The airplane mode lets you fly around. The bunch of hidden teleporters. You know, as usual, what's built famous for interactivity and stuff like that. It very well shows off everything. It's fun to actually go in this tech demo and see like the houses or just weird environments that Ken created, like a giant chessboard with all the pieces is fun.
Wow.
And it's a cool it's a cool exploration map, like it's a nice little like for a tech demo it's surprisingly playable.
Yeah.
There's one enemy too, well besides the worms, the evil Alice, Ken's brother, whatever. Don't shoot him because all they do is multiply until there is a memory out error. So leave him be. Leave him be in his peace state. If you don't bother him, he doesn't turn evil. I would recommend checking that out. And of course, the map editor.
Yes.
The amazing map editor. And build is, you know, as I said before, is basically Sector BSP engine, like the Doom mm-hmm. engine. But where making maps for early games like Doom was basically nothing but a bunch of map in your imagination, build engine does you one better, and not only gives you like a complete editor, which basically the editor and the art tools came with Duke Nukem 3D, which was insane for the time. Usually even the games that supported modding, like, you know, Doom, were never moddable out of the box.
Yeah.
You'd had to write your own tools. Duke Nukem 3D gave you all the tools and the documentation on all the file formats, which I found insane. But the editor is great. Like you have zoom in and out on the 2D map. The controls are intuitive. You can have copy paste for sectors. What else? The numerical values I edited in the editor itself. You can have a grid mode with four different grids, or you know, you don't have to snap it to the grid at all. Obviously, it's freeform engine, and then you press your gray, you know, the gray enter key on the numpad, and you get the complete 3D mode.
You can just walk around.
We have the control over heights of
yeah.
sectors, page up and
it's
page
amazing.
Down, you know, alters the heights. You have complete control of texturing with, textures aligned per point. So with the numpad, you can stretch and move and align textures in any way you see fit. You can land sprites on the wall. You just point with your cursor and you put sprite decals, on walls.
Instant posters. It's amazing.
Instant. It's especially that early on, like no matter it was like no wonder that the game was licensed so many times because the engine, I mean, because obviously, and that's why I guess so many amateur companies made games with it, because this is something you could legitimately do. Like, I remember being young and starting the level editor on Duke 3D and being like, oh, I can do this. And it was relatively easy to just sort of carve out the basic level and just start improving on it. Like, everything, the sort of idea of having, you know, high tags and low tags for the sectors is also... well, kind of like in Doom, because it had two values, but still a lot better. And of course, in Duke Nukem 3D, you can check for all those values. And what's unique to Duke 3D, and I guess by extension, Redneck Rampage and NAM and World War II GI, is you know, it had the control script, so all the object behavior was stored in those easy to read just text files, basically. That you could rather easily alter. So the editor is marvelous. I mean, it's amazing.
Even comparing it to something like the Unreal editor, which as a, you know, as a teenager, I cut my teeth on. I used to love making editors in that. The editor for it was just ahead of its time.
Oh, it's really, absolutely.
It's fun. It's like playing a game.
Yeah, it's the most revolutionary idea. Plus, you know, combined like the art tools also, because it had its own art format, which like the art editor was easy to manage, and you can preset the animations and the animation cycles in the art editor, which was also, you know, it also held a built-in pixel editor, so you could like, you know, pixel by pixel work with UART if you prefer it that way. I mean,
absolutely,
really, really, really cool, really, really cool stuff. And the formats were open from the get-go. I mean, they published the documentation with Duke Nukem 3D, so, and the same format applied for all the build games, basically. And
very empowering to have such a tool bundled in.
Yes,
with it.
Or even like so much so that it had the built-in, you know, where you could do built-in staircases in the editor, like it would do the heights for you, and or like circles. That's how all the trees in NAM are made. Like you press C and it actually just does a polygonal circle. So you know, which looks like a pillar, you know, and in 3D mode. So yeah, it's a great engine, and it was really, really fast. I mean, I ran Duke Nukem 3D on a rather underpowerful machine, you know, 800x600, which is like the most my monitor supported at the time, and it ran really, really good. And it looked better than all those games looked better than any polygonal games at the time. I mean, certainly better than Quake. I love Quake, but oh my god, like between all the brown and low poly, just
Quake's ugly.
Just looked like shit in comparison to the bright and colorful environment. I mean, start off like you know, Duke Nukem Caribbean, and you'll just like die laughing in the first 10 seconds. With the Duke singing the Beach Boys song and like all the Hawaiian theme, like, and I like how they did the different, because you know the build had the built-in, if you paint there something green, the green color was palette swappable, so that's how they did all the different color shirts, Hawaiian shirts on different pig cups and stuff like
of
this,
course.
And that's how all the strippers also had like different color lingerie and stuff like that. So and that's also in the editor too, like in the map editor, you can assign the palette shifts. Smart, really, really clever. Like all those features,
very
like,
smart.
Like Ken designed the editor and the engine with you know, game design in mind. They were tools for designers, which I think made all the difference. I mean, build engine is actually, I hear, not liked by some people for its physics for some reason. I think it's perfectly fine. I don't give a shit what anybody says.
I think it works.
It's made some of my favorite games from the 90s made using it.
Even if you don't like the games made in the build engine, you cannot deny the influence that it had on first-person shooter and game design in general.
Absolutely.
I think it really pushed what we could do with our games forward. I mean, you can see stuff like Strife, which pushes the Doom engine beyond what the Doom engine was meant to do, but none of that got anywhere
near. Can you imagine if Strife was made with Build?
I secretly wish it was. Like, well, it's no secret.
I know. Oh, secretly, man. I openly wish it was because, like, it was clearly meant for a better technology. Like, Strife pushed Doom Engine as far as it could and really couldn't do a lot of things Strife, I think, aspired to do. Which Build Engine would be perfectly suited for, because you've seen a lot of those features in Build Engine games, basically.
You do. Yeah, you really do.
Oh no, Build Engine is amazing. I like everything about it, and I like just about every game made with it.
Yeah, if it's not, you know, there's a few sort of things like you've got your Tech Wars and you've got your paint brawls and everything like that. But generally speaking, you know, the major games released all have unique properties. You know, they're not just Doom clones. They've all got interesting ideas. They bring something new to the table. They're all worth checking out just for all these amazing ideas that these people had. You know, people go, oh, first-person shooters, they're all the same. But that's absolutely not the case with the Build Engine.
No. I love it. I adore it. All the games, check them out. If anything from what we discussed you haven't played and it sounds remotely interesting to you, please do check it out. It's very much worth it. Anything else you'd like to add, sir?
I think we've pretty much covered everything.
Yeah.
I will say, I think the Build Engine was the last major engine to use sprites.
Yes.
The last major 3D, which is, so it's, the Build represents the end of the very peak of that form of, it's the very peak of that sort of time in history.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it may be a dinosaur now, but you have to remember that when we were kids, you know, this stuff blew our mind. It really was sensational.
Absolutely.
It was world-changing.
Yes. I agree 100%. Well, it's been great having you here today, sir.
Thank you for having me along. It's been very fun going through all these memories.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love all of those games, man. Like, it's good that a lot of them did not get lost. And, you know, most of those games remembered fondly or, you know, for not fondly for other reasons. So, but those games don't seem to really go away. So that's a very good thing.
I don't think Duke 3D will ever be forgotten.
No.
You know. I want to go and play some Blood now.
So, before we depart, is there anything you want to plug? Anything you're working on or something like that? I don't know.
At the moment, one of my major projects at the moment is playing as many DOS games as I can find on my shelf and taking screenshots of them on my DOSist good Tumblr. You can even find screenshots of Power Slave on there.
Yes.
So it is relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. So go there. Check out that screenshot blog. Mm-hmm. I fucking love it. I wish it was updated more often. So
I have a job, you know.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I'm the one to say. I have like 16 videos in 4 years. So there is that, and you know, thank you everybody for listening. I am Anatoly. You should probably know this by now, and you probably know where to find me, but you can find me on Twitter at Das Nostalgic, as well as on the website dasnostalgia.com, Facebook group Das Nostalgia, YouTube channel Das Nostalgic, Das Nostalgia Steam group, whatever. Just you say Das Nostalgia, I'm there. That's me, and you can find Ben on also a variety of places. Where can they find you, sir?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Ben-304, or I don't even know what I am. But join us for... We always have fun DOS talks on Twitter, so I think I'm Ben_304.
Absolutely.
I don't even know what I am anymore. Just listen to this podcast over and over. That'll be enough.
That's right. Listen to the podcast. Join us in the morning DOS talk, tell us your memories about Build Games or anything. And if you think you have an interesting topic for a podcast, get in touch with me, and you could be here talking about old stuff that some people still care for.
Feels amazing. Feels amazing.
Yeah, this was good. Well, it was really, really fun. Maybe we can do it again sometime.
We really should. I love talking about old games.
And maybe maybe something related more closely to the to your area of expertise. Something like actually art related. Art related. Well, we kind of talked about art. I mean, art in most of those big releases is good, unless you know, like we did cover Witchhaven's art quite extensively. So there is that.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you, Ben, for being here. And everyone, have a good day, night, evening, whatever. And we'll see you and hear you and talk to you next time. Bye.
Goodbye.
Hold on there a second. I know. Some of you might be asking right now, but what about 1997 Redneck Rampage Hunting Simulator spin-off, Redneck Deer Hunting? Well, we forgot about it, and so should you.